Do you want to ride your bike, or do you want to learn how to train so you can really ride your bike?
It's all about building fitness. Get your legs spinning and get your heart pumping. It's not about training what you're good at. It's about training what you're not good at. They'll want to know what you've been doing for the last few months because you'll be kicking their ass. This is exactly how you get ahead. This is exactly how you get stronger. I'm giving you the tools you need to be a beast on two wheels. If you do the things I'm talking about, you'll be stronger, you'll be fitter, you'll be faster, and everyone around you will notice the difference. This is Tailwind Coaching, and you're listening to the Tailwind Coaching Podcast.
Welcome, everybody, to another edition of the Tailwind Coaching Podcast. I'm your host, Coach Rob, and I've got another great show for you today. Podcast episode number 51, I believe. We already covered effective off-season training. Now it's time to cover effective base building and base training. And we're going to get to that right after a couple of announcements here. Number one, the website, the Daily Grind Cycling Journal blog, the episode show notes receptacle, my online training plan store is all located at tailwind-coaching.com. So head on over there and check that out. While you're there, you can visit all of our sponsors who do contribute a few pennies to the hosting and bandwidth costs of the Tailwind Coaching Podcast. Remember, the Tailwind Coaching Podcast is a completely free service that I offer. I do enjoy watching people enjoy riding their bikes, and typically the faster you can ride your bike, the more enjoyment you have riding your bike. So click when you're there, visit the sponsors, click through, and if you purchase something from them, they toss a few pennies my way to cover the bandwidth and hosting costs of the Tailwind Coaching Podcast. Those sponsors, Road ID, has been with me for a long time. Road ID can speak for you when you are unable to. The Sufferfest, click on the crying eyes is the concept there. They produce some great training videos, actually great alternatives if you're just not feeling a really, really structured workout one day on the trainer. That's coming from somebody who follows his own training plans. So Sufferfest is really, really good stuff, especially if you like watching a professional race while you train. U.S. Wellness meets for hormone-free, grass-fed, healthy protein and all kinds of good stuff, snacks over there. Perfect if you're following my fat adaptation style of diet. The Bulletproof Exec has a lot of nifty little gizmos and gadgets to help improve your recovery, improve your life, and improve your fitness and biochemical wellness in general. That does not mean they sell EPO or anything else. Get your minds out of the gutter. And of course, my Coach Rob's recommended Amazon store for all of my recommended training tools, supplements, Garmin devices, etc., etc. I always advocate shopping at your local shop. However, sometimes you just can't get what you need there. And of course, Amazon is a wonderful second option. So click through those sponsors and pick up anything you're needing, and they'll throw a few pennies my way to pay for the hosting costs. You can contact me, CoachRobDC@gmail.com, or you can follow me by clicking any of the icons in the upper right-hand side of the website at tailwind-coaching.com. That includes Strava, Stitcher, Facebook, Twitter. You can follow me via RSS feed. You can sign up for the Tailwind Coaching newsletter, which will give you weekly updates on information published on the website, and it'll also give you about every month an exclusive members-only newsletter, which will have generally a free workout, some training tips, and some other information in there. So go ahead and sign up for that on the website as well. Underneath that, please rate this podcast on iTunes. If you're able, head on over to the website. Again, tailwind-coaching.com. Find this post for the episode show notes and click on the link to rate this podcast on iTunes. Helps me move up the rankings, and the more rankings I get, the more people are able to see this podcast. And the more people who are able to see this podcast, the more people are able to take the information and put it to good use, and it'll help them out. Again, my goal with this, it's a free podcast, is to get people to enjoy riding their bike more. That's what cycling is all about for me, and that's what I'd like it to be all about for you. And if you get faster doing it, all the better. All right. Training plans that are available. I just released. This show is being recorded on Thursday, January 29th. I just released my high intensity trainer workout, Finish Faster. And that is a brutal, brutal workout designed specifically to train VO2 max level efforts, repeatability, and fatigue resistance. Give that a check over there on the tailwind-coaching.com training plan store. Click on high intensity trainer workouts, HIIT workouts, and you can check that out. There will also be a coupon code attached to this podcast. As always, you can use the podcast 10, podcast 10 at checkout for 10% off any of your training plan purchases, which will include any of my modular training plans, which are available. My raw strength module, which is available, which will put you in the gym doing some lifting and working on building some strength through different biochemical pathways than you would get riding your bike. My advanced base module was released a couple weeks ago. People are doing very, very well with that who've picked it up. I suggest if you're looking for a way to change up your training this base period, that's the way to do it, folks. I have you doing all kinds of crazy stuff in there, shifting from the front to the back of the saddle, standing drills, different hand positions on the bar, training in tuck positions, all kinds of good stuff. Things that will are designed to give your body increased efficiency. All right? If you produce the same amount of power at a higher efficiency, you will go faster, folks. That's all there is to it. So check out that advanced training, advanced base module training plan right there on the website. Also want to point out my training plan support is still available, and it's always available. I've got plenty of spots open for that. $30 a month gets you my coaching brain and my help. The only downside is, and it's not even really a downside because honestly, the plans are phenomenal to begin with. You just buy a modular training plan or one of any of my training plans, really. And the training plan support basically gives you access to my brain weekly so that you can make modifications and ask questions, etc., etc. So training plan support, where else are you going to find a coach for about $30 a month, folks? That's the bottom line. You get a coach for $30 a month, and essentially all you have to buy on top of that is just a training plan, which might run you all $30 or so. So keep that in mind. I have 2 one-on-one slots available. I believe one of those is going to be filled, but it's not filled yet. So keep that in mind. If you're looking for a one-on-one spot or a coaching consult, shoot me an email, coachrobdc@gmail.com. All right. All that out of the way, we're going to get on with today's topic, and that is effective base building. All right, effective base building. First off, we have to ask the question, if we are building a base of fitness, that's what we're supposed to do in the base building phase, why do we do it? I mean, you're going to be asking yourself, why am I going through all this to build fitness? Well, here's the bottom line, folks. Traditionally, base building meant you're there to build an aerobic base. You're there to ride long, slow miles so that you can build up all those aerobic enzymes and capillary density in your muscles and all this kind of stuff. Partially true. I will not argue with that concept. However, aerobic endurance is going to be built through all training that challenges your body in any significant way. So if you're out riding your bike, whether you're riding your bike in zone 2 or doing a recovery-ish ride, or you're riding at zone 5, zone 6, zone 7, you will be challenging your body, all right? Your heart is not used to working above a certain level. In fact, the new Fitbit Charge HR is a great tool here, and this is what I mean. If you look at your heart rate throughout the day, whether you're up, you're moving around, you're doing X, Y, or Z, your average person is going to have a heart rate somewhere between 70 and 85 beats a minute. Now, imagine what happens if you take your heart rate up to 140 beats a minute? And now I'm using a very healthy, say, 30-year-old person here at this point. So keep that in mind as well. But if your heart rate's up to 140 beats a minute, you're actually talking about being in a zone where aerobic endurance is going to be challenged. All right. So the idea that we used to do base training to build aerobic endurance is kind of silly, because aerobic endurance is built anytime we're on the bike, unless we're riding to the coffee shop for an espresso. But I don't know many people that consider that to be training. All right. Base period work, the bottom line here, the base period work is a time for you to build the base of your training periods. Okay. This is where you build all of the base fitness, strength fitness, muscular fitness, force reduction, muscular endurance. All of these things are what should be built during the base period. All right. And the foundation laid is basically what higher intensity efforts are built upon later on in the season. If you don't have a sufficient base built up by the time you start doing higher intensity work, you will not reap the benefits of that higher intensity work. I see this all the time. Okay? I see this all the time. I see people who are spending very little time doing base training. Very, very little time during base training. And I touched upon this a long time ago, about a year ago, when I discussed the high intensity trap. Okay. I see people who do not have a sufficient base of fitness. And as a sidebar, a base of fitness is not something that you build in a season. A base of fitness is something that is truly built over a few years of training. And I'm not just talking riding, I'm talking actual physiological training. Okay. Those of you who've been cycling for 10, 12, 15, 20, 25 years have a solid base of fitness. Your body has adapted over a number of years to an aerobic sport and an aerobic activity. Those of you who are just starting out maybe this year, or you're going to race for the first time this year, and you've only ridden for a year or two, your base is not going to be nearly as broad and as large as somebody who's been riding for 10 years. Okay? The bottom line, the bottom point, and the most important point here is that if you do not have a base, and this is what I was getting to, and I've seen this in the past, if you do not have a base, it doesn't matter how much VO2 max work you do. That functional threshold is not going to rise to the degree you want it to. And the reason why is because you just don't have the base to support that functional threshold. All right, you have to have a base to support higher intensity work later on in the season. Otherwise, you're not going to get very far. All right. And if you remember a couple of episodes ago, we talked about Friel's triangle. Okay, the muscular force, the aerobic endurance, and the speed skills. All right. And we talked about rotating that Friel's triangle 120 degrees counterclockwise, because it brings muscular endurance to the bottom of the pyramid. That's 100% true again in this case. And our goal during the base period, just as it was during the off season, is to rotate that triangle 120 degrees counterclockwise and build a base of muscular endurance, aerobic endurance, and muscular force production. Now, I throw something else in there, which is sort of the peak of the pyramid. All right. And that gets into what we're doing here on our bike, cycling based training, okay, versus non-cycling based training. In fact, I'm going to go over the non-cycling based training first, because it's a little bit quicker to go through. All right. Non-cycling based training, as I've talked about in Strength Training for Cyclists Part 1, Part 2, and I've mentioned numerous times in other podcasts and other posts on this blog, weight training. That mTOR pathway, that mTORC1 pathway, which leads to mitochondrial biogenesis, which leads to more power plants in the muscle cell. More power plants in the muscle cell mean more efficient energy production, whether it's lifting weights, whether it's changing a tire on the car, whether it's walking up the stairs with a load of groceries, or whether it's sprinting for the line at the last lap of a race, or whether it's climbing a mountain in a Gran Fondo. All right. Weight training is a solid way to build mitochondrial density. Building mitochondrial density leads to more efficient energy production, which leads to a wider base. All right. More mitochondria, more energy capability to use on the bike. All right. Non-cycling based training. We also have cross training, whether it's running, whether it's rowing, whether it's CrossFit. I hate CrossFit, by the way. I'm going to adjust this mic just a second so you might hear some strange, funky stuff. I hate CrossFit, by the way, because the injury rate is so high, but that's completely beside the point. If you're doing CrossFit and you're not hurting yourself, congratulations. You're one of the very, very small minority that I see a lot of athletes from CrossFit in my office that are all hurt. But anyway, that's a sidebar. Cross training of some kind or another, cross country skiing, snowshoeing this time of year, especially in the Northeast with those of you in Massachusetts who are probably trying to dig your way to 3 feet of snow right now. Cross training is a very effective way to build an aerobic base and to challenge those higher intensity pathways, which lead to mitochondrial biogenesis. They lead to increased muscular capillarization. They lead to increased muscle fiber hypertrophy. They lead to increased aerobic enzyme production along that first cytochrome, the electron transport chain. Check out Biohacking Your Energy Systems for more information on that. More non-cycling training, core stability and conditioning. Okay, the ability for your core to support your body on the bike. How many people have out there have had problems with numbness and tingling or pain in their hands? Raise your hand. All right. Yes, fit is generally part of the issue. However, another part of the issue is a weak core, which makes you unable to hold your body up, all right? Your core has to be strong and has to be functionally strong when challenged. That is an absolute key and an absolute requirement in order for you to be successful as a cyclist, as a racing cyclist, as a competitive cyclist, as somebody who just goes out and does group rides, okay? Your legs attached to your core, most of your power comes through your core. If you have inefficient core stability, you will lose power on the bike. That is a undisputed solid fact. I have seen it over and over again. I have seen people who start doing some kind of core functional training, and suddenly they say, geez, I'm going faster. I'm putting out more wattage. This is kind of crazy. I didn't do anything. Actually, you did. You solidified the base from which you pedal from. And that's important. All right. So non-cycling base period training. Don't skip it. Because I can tell you, when you start skipping it and blowing it off, that's when you start to lose a little bit. You start to lose that upper edge. All right. Non-cycling training. Let's move into cycling base training. All right. These are the things I talked about on Friel's Triangle. All right. The endurance, the force production skills. All right. Endurance, like I said, will be built through any of your time on the bike. So if you're on the bike, you are building some kind of aerobic endurance. If you are on the bike doing other skills, you are still building some kind of aerobic endurance. Studies, countless studies, by the way, have shown that even high-intensity work, while it's designed to elicit changes at the upper-end physiology of how your body works, VO2 max physiology, the creatine phosphate pathway physiology, anaerobic glycolysis, all right? Higher intensity work is designed primarily to attack those energy pathways, but it also works on building aerobic endurance. It's been proven time and time and time again, all right? Force production skills on the bike. These are those low cadence, high tension, leg press type movements on the bike. These are those climbing a hill at 60 RPM, putting out monster wattage, all right? The bulging quad, bulging calf kind of workouts on the bike, all right? Those are force production skills, and those are augmented by those weight training sessions, your cross training sessions, things like that, explosiveness, okay? That's what augments those force production skills. And if you look at Friel's Triangle, okay? If you're looking at Friel's Triangle right now, and we've rotated that thing 120 degrees counterclockwise, you'll notice that on the bottom left corner, you're going to be looking at aerobic endurance. On the bottom right corner, you're going to be looking at force production. Okay, and I believe that's correct. In fact, I'm going to pull up my copy of that triangle right now, just so that I can make sure I confirm that for you, so that I make sure I'm speaking 100% correctly here. All right. Triangle. Aerobic endurance on the bottom left. Muscular force, bottom right. In between them, muscular endurance. All right. If you remember that triangle, force plus endurance equals muscular endurance. And really, that is the base of the pyramid, folks. I talked about this in the previous podcasts here. All right. And if the point remains, and it hasn't changed since that podcast, if you have sufficient muscular endurance, if you got a lot of me, you could build anything on top of me. All right. You cannot build me on nothing, though. All right. There's a reason muscular endurance is essentially shortened and abbreviated as me, because me is the most important thing. All right. Without it, your body will fail. It will fail, and that is sure as the sun rises. If you build a huge base of me, you can build anything on top of that. You can build 200-mile rides on top of a large base of me. Can you build a 200-mile ride on 10 trainer sessions in the winter? Almost certainly not. All right? Your body will break down, your body will falter and fail. So you need to build me. All right. That is the key point to take home to this part of the podcast, is me is the most important thing you have. All right. And I'm also going to add to this thing. If you're looking at that pyramid right now, you're going to notice speed skill is going to be the third point in that pyramid. All right. I want you to imagine, as you start to build a pyramid, all right, imagine the base of the pyramid sitting right on the ground there, and you start to add layers to it, and it starts to go up a little bit. The point of the pyramid is very close to the base, right? But it is still there. There's still a point to that pyramid. Now, we flip that triangle on its side, and we're going to squash it down, so that speed skill is going to be almost in line, almost in a straight line, with aerobic endurance and muscular force, all right? That speed skill, the third point of that pyramid, I do not consider that to be a build period type of workout. And I will tell you why. Because speed skills lend themselves very, very well to training during the base phase. All right. The reason why is training during the base phase, if you're doing nothing but endurance rides, you're going outside and you're riding 2 hours in the cold, in the misery, in the salt, in the sleet, in the spray. If you're going out doing that, why not just do some endurance speed work? Why not do some efficiency work? That's what speed skills are, folks. They're neuromuscular skills which coordinate your body's muscular contractions, all right? They teach your body to contract muscles in an efficient manner. That's how you increase the speed of a pedal stroke. That's how you make a smoother pedal stroke. And all of those things relate to increasing efficiency. Increasing efficiency is not something you should be doing just during the build phase of your training. Increasing your efficiency should be something you're doing throughout all of your training. All right. How many of you have stopped doing any kind of single leg drills or speed, high cadence pedaling drills or anything else when you hit your build phase? Raise your hand. I've got mine up. I can tell you that. I've seen it happen. I've done it. I've made that mistake. I know what happens, and it sucks. Your body starts to lose that extra edge. All right, and if our whole goal is to go faster and get the most out of our build period work, when we're doing those longer miles and those easier miles and those easier hours on the trainer, why not incorporate that efficiency work so that we can get the most out of our training? All right, that's why I consider speed skills to be a base period skill, not necessarily something that adds on later. Those speed skills are very, very necessary, and they're legitimately useful, not only at the higher end efforts that Friel considers, anaerobic endurance, sprint power, things like that. They're actually very efficient at lower end efforts as well. The less energy you can spend when you're pedaling fast and going very slow, the more energy you're going to have to pedal fast, really hard, and go really fast. So consider meshing and melding those speed skills, those neuromuscular skills, into your endurance rides. All right, so it's a quick overview of cycling based training, non-cycling based training. Let's move into a question that a lot of people have asked, and a question I see asked a lot on forums, and that is, well, if I'm doing base training work, what are my heart rate zones? What are my power zones? Well, heart rate zones first, folks. Base training work, the vast majority of your time in the saddle, your training time, is going to be at zone 2, zone 3 heart rates, okay? Those are essentially the heart rates which lead to you building the most aerobic endurance factors. Granted, I am expecting you are doing some off-the-bike strength training. I'm expecting you're doing some off-the-bike cross training. And I'm expecting you're doing some off-the-bike core and functional stability training as well. So, granted, if you're doing those, most of your training time on the bike should be zone 2, zone 3. Those are going to be mostly technique dependent, whether you're doing muscular endurance work, whether you are doing single leg drills, whether you're doing spin-ups, whether you're doing fat burners, whatever you're doing. All right. High intensity work, obviously, things like muscular endurance intervals are going to drive you up into those higher heart rate zones. And don't be afraid of those higher heart rate zones. Those higher heart rate zones, especially around that 90 to 92, 93% of lactate threshold heart rate, provided you've measured it properly, which you can do using my zone 4, 5, 6 power training. Of course, if you hurry up and act quick, you can get that for nothing with signing up for the Tailwind Coaching newsletter. So silly little plug right there. But an effective one nonetheless, because you get that free power and heart rate testing workout. Higher intensity work, obviously, like those ME intervals, will create a higher intensity heart rate. Again, don't be afraid of those, because those sweet spot intervals, 90, 91, 92% of lactate threshold, those are really the ones that are going to give you the most bang for your buck. You'll be able to recover very quickly from them. You will also be able to get and derive a lot of physiological adaptation from those intervals. So those are not necessarily a bad thing. You should not only be doing zone 2 work, folks. Need to tell you that. All right. Power zones for base period work. These are basically the same as the heart rate zones. You're talking zone 2, zone 3, zone 3 plus, or that sweet spot zone, which everybody is talking about. Sweet spot is very easy to find with a power meter. All right. You can basically dial into that 90 to 92% of functional threshold very easily, very quickly, and you can just sit on that for the duration of some of your intervals. And let me tell you, folks, you can vary it up. If you want to do single leg drills at sweet spot, be my guest. If you want to do high cadence work at sweet spot, be my guest. If you want to do muscular endurance work at sweet spot, be my guest. All right, that's the point here. That's the point I'm trying to get across to all of you that are listening right now, is that these intensities, these intervals that you're doing, these can be mixed, matched, and melded together in order to create a very wide variety of intervals and a wide variety of work that will keep your body guessing and adapting. And that's our ultimate goal with any kind of training, but especially base training. All right. So to recap it here, your base time, you're going to be spent mostly in zone 2 and 3, mostly technique dependent, and be very, very cognizant of trying to spend time in that sweet spot area. You're going to get the most bang for your buck in there. I'm going to go off on a quick tangent that higher intensities during base periods are okay within reason. Again, keeping it limited to once, maybe twice per week if you're going into the later base periods, that high intensity work is going to be absolutely beneficial. It's going to sort of shock the system. And by shocking the system, it's going to be, your body's going to say, geez, I got to adapt to this really quick, because that's different from what I'm used to getting. So it starts to adapt to a higher intensity of effort. And then suddenly you go back to that lower intensity, longer duration stuff. Now your body is, I got to adapt to this stuff now too. It's a way to keep your body guessing, keeping it on its toes. And again, that is the goal of any training plan. Any good coach will tell you that. All right. take a momentary break here, and I'm going to be right back. We're going to be talking about the different paradigms of base training. All right, covering some of the information here about those paradigms of base building and of efficient base building, we need to talk about those points on the pyramid and along with the muscular endurance, the me that makes up the bottom of that pyramid. Number one thing, and this is what for years and years and years, for decades even, and still in the professional Peloton ranks, the number one goal of base period work is to build endurance. Now, as we talked about earlier on in this very same podcast, and I've talked about a number of times in the past, endurance itself is a byproduct of riding your bike and of the cross-training activities that you do. All right? It is not something that you need to specifically be going out there and doing nothing but riding at zone two to achieve. Granted, there are benefits to going out and just getting some miles in. Getting in saddle time is important. However, getting in saddle time while working on other techniques is a much better use of time. So essentially, the endurance is the byproduct of your time on the bike doing other drills and other efforts. All right. Endurance is built over years, as I said before, not months. So while yes, you can increase aerobic enzyme activity and aerobic endurance over a period of a couple months, very typically your endurance base is something that you are building up over multiple years. So those of you who are just starting out, you're going to see big changes very quickly. You're going to get much stronger much more quickly. That is your body adapting from sedentary or for example, a runner or a weightlifter or something like that, adapting to an endurance type of effort. And the body adapts to those initial changes very quickly. However, building further endurance work takes a lot of time and a lot of effort. And that is something, again, that happens over a couple of years, not over the course of a couple of months. If you are a cyclist who has spent many, many years riding, you have a pretty solid endurance base built already. The endurance that you're building during the base phase of your training is really just a tune-up on that. Keep that in mind. All right. That period of a couple months, like I said, you're going to add or kickstart the machinery you need to be more efficient of an endurance athlete, not necessarily build it from the ground up. All right. Riding for endurance alone, as I've said in the past again, and it needs to be said again, because there are those of you out there who continue to just go out and ride countless miles in the cold. Riding for endurance alone is essentially a waste of time. You need to take that time and use it to build other skills, efficiency skills, pedal stroke efficiency, pedal stroke fluidity, on the bike flexibility, the ability to ride in the drops, things like that. You need to be doing that. All right. You need to be doing skills like the following: neuromuscular speed skills. Okay. Force development drills. Muscular endurance drills. Those are the kind of things you need to be doing during your endurance rides. All right. Neuromuscular skills, for example, speed skills, they are one of the corners of Friel's triangle. And of course, they are a very necessary one, as I've mentioned before. The ability to turn the pedals over smoothly and quickly will increase the amount of efficiency your body has, the amount of power you can actually put to the ground, and the amount of speed you're actually able to achieve. All right. As I mentioned before, neuromuscular skills are designed to speed up and smooth the process of contracting muscular chains. All right. For example, pushing the pedals is a very fine dance between extension of the leg, extension of the knee, extension of the ankle. Okay. That requires contractions of no less than the glute, max, minimus, medius, the piriformis, all of the adductors, the abductors, the PFL, the vastus lateralis of the quad, the rest of the quad muscles, the VMO, the vastus intermedius, and the rectus femoris, the tibialis anterior, which is a stabilizing muscle in this case, the gastroc, the soleus, the plantaris, the muscles of the foot, which will stabilize the ankle, the muscles that control the toes, which will also help to stabilize the ankle, the hamstrings, the biceps, biceps femoris, the semimembranosus, the semitendinosus, the hip extensors, including the lumbar extensors, the QL, which stabilizes the hip on that side, the QL of the opposite side, which stabilizes the opposite side erector spinae, the same side erector spinae, you get the idea. With all those muscles that are used to simply push a pedal, is it no wonder that doing neuromuscular skills to speed the fluidity, the speed, and the excitation inhibition cycle, the I just drew a blank on the actual word here. It'll come to me. Is it no wonder that doing neuromuscular skills are important to smooth those muscular transitions from flexion to extension? That's just pushing down the pedal, folks. That doesn't even get into pulling back on the pedal at the bottom of the stroke, unweighting the pedal on the upstroke, etc., etc. That's a whole different bag of Cheerios, so to speak. I think I just created a new word there, a new metaphor. These things have to be practiced. They have to be trained. Your body does not come out of the box and suddenly be efficient at making these things happen. All right. More coordinated contractions that you train, all right, the more efficient you are contracting those muscles in a coordinated fashion, the better off you will be, the more power you will produce, the faster you will be able to ride. Efficiency, folks, is the most overlooked way to be faster. And that is true among guys who are riding just group rides, Fondo riders, Cat 5 racers, Cat 4 racers, all the way up to Cat 1 racers. Efficiency is the absolute most overlooked way to be faster because those drills suck. All right. Those drills suck, folks. I hate doing them myself, but they are an absolute necessity. When you stop doing them, you realize what a necessity those drills are. All right. You can feasibly do more with 200 watts of functional threshold power than the guy next to you can do with 300 watts if you are more efficient than him. All right. The human body is only approximately 20 to 25% efficient. All right, so let's take 200 watts. If you're only 25% efficient, at 200 watts, that means your body is producing 800 watts of power. It's producing 800 watts of power, but only 200 of it is getting translated into forward momentum. Okay? Let's talk about if you are 20% efficient. If you're producing 200 watts of power and your body is 20% efficient, suddenly, now you're producing 1,000 watts of power, but only 200 of it is being sent to the pedals to move your body forward. All right? So, let's take two cyclists. They both produce 1,000 physiological watts of power. One guy is 20% efficient. He sees 200 watts on his power meter. The guy next to him produces the same 1,000 physiological watts. All right, and I'm going to call it physiological watts because that's an easy thing for you guys to grasp or wrap your head around. That other 80% is lost to heat and things like that and other body processes other than pushing the pedals. So essentially it is lost power to you. It's necessary, all right? It's necessary for the body to function and survive, and it's a byproduct of those exothermic reactions. So it's just the way life is, All right, your body's only 20% effective at producing power to the pedals, 20 to 25. But getting back to my analogy of the 1,000 physiological watts, cyclist A produces 1,000 physiological watts. They're 20% efficient. They see 200 watts on their power meter. Cyclist B has the same physiology, all right, which is essentially impossible, but let's just pretend. 1,000 physiological watts. Their body produces 1,000 physiological watts. But that cyclist is 22% efficient. Now they see 220 watts on their power meter. They're putting out the same effort. They're putting out the same physiological wattage, but because their body is more efficient at converting that physiological wattage to force at the pedals, they are going to be faster, theoretically. So this is what I say. You can feasibly do more with 200 watts than the guy next to you can do with 300. The guy next to you may be doing 300 watts, but he may be doing 300 watts and his heart rate might be through the roof. You might be doing 200 watts at the same speed and your heart rate is very manageable. You've got more left in the tank. That guy's suffering. Even though he's putting out more power, he's not going as fast as you. And the perfect example of this are two cyclists. You get two of them to ride side by side. You get a really big guy with a big frontal area. You get a really skinny, thin little guy with a small frontal area. You put them riding side by side under very similar conditions, no climbs, nothing else, all else considered equal. All right? Who's going to be faster? Obviously the bigger guy. He can put out more power. All right? Let's take two guys of the same size. Let's put them side by side, all conditions equal, no climbs, nothing specific to weigh them down. Let's have one guy sit up like a kite. Let's have one guy in the drops, tucked in. Let's have them both pedaling at 90 RPM. Who's going to be faster? Guy in the drops. Because he's more efficient. He can do more with the same wattage. All right. Both illustrations are just there to point out that you need these neuromuscular skills. You need these speed skills. You need these efficiency skills. I personally think these should stop being called speed skills and they should be called efficiency skills. All right. I call them speed skills because that's what's been adapted. I prefer the term efficiency skills or efficiency drills. All right. They prime the body to be ready for high intensity training in the future, specifically sprint work, time trial work, zone 5 work, etc., etc. The more efficient you are doing those kind of intervals, the more power you can eke out of them. How do you get more efficient? Simple. Drills like spin-up drills, super spin drills, high cadence work, single leg drills, high cadence standing drills. All right? All of those drills on the front of the saddle, on the back of the saddle, in the drops, in the tops, on the hoods, Belgian style on the hoods, in a time trial position. These are neuromuscular skills, they're efficiency skills that have to be done in multiple ways in order to challenge your body. That's what you need to take home or take away from that portion of what I was just talking about here. Rewind it if you need to, because it's really important, okay? The next part of the triangle, the other base part, if you will, one of the most important base parts, actually, force development. Remember, this plus endurance equals all that me that we're so keen on developing, all right? Force development, the ability to push the pedals, all right? The ability to create and generate large amounts of pedal tension, muscular tension, while you're pushing those pedals. The ability to push a big, huge freaking gear, a pie plate on the front with that little tiny 11-tooth cog in the back. The ability to turn that over is force development. It's the ability for your muscles to contract hard and create a lot of force on those pedals. All right. Think of it this way. It is inherently your ability to overcome gravity when you are climbing. And that's why many, many people are doing all of their force work on hills. Not bad, but stop it. do some of it on the flats. You won't always be climbing. All right? These are equated to leg presses on the bike. These are the guys you see. Jan Ulrich was a great, great example of this. Huge legs, huge muscles, slow cadence, a lot of force development. All right? Not necessarily the most efficient, although we could also talk about the most doped. So let's leave doping out of it, even though we know that he was a chemical child, essentially. Slow cadence, bulging muscles, a lot of force development on his in his riding style. All right, this is where your gym work comes in. This is where that raw strength module you bought comes in. This is where all those deadlifts, all those squats, that's where all of this comes in. And track guys are well known for this. All right, the ability to produce a lot of force in a short amount of time, or a lot of force period, I should say. We'll get to that later. A lot of force period. They're doing gym work. They're doing heavy squats, heavy deadlifts, lots of weightlifting, functional strength training so that they can produce a lot of force on command. All right, it's a bottom point of one of those pyramids because it doesn't matter how fast you can spin the pedals. If you can't produce force to turn the pedals over, you can't go anywhere. You simply can't go anywhere. So it is one of the absolute basic necessities of base building. You need to work on force development. How do you do that? You're talking those low cadence, high tension intervals, climbing hills at 60 RPM in or out of the saddle, lots of muscular tension on the legs, screaming legs, man. That's what it's all about. So take home from that one, you've got to be able to do those leg presses on the bike. All right. So if you're out doing rides, and you're out doing your zone 2 endurance rides, you better throw in some leg presses while you're out there. Otherwise, it's going to be a waste of time. All right. Finally, the combination of endurance and force development. You're talking muscular endurance, the me. That's what we really need. It's necessary to prevent breakdown and failure. Cramps, folks, are a result of lack of muscular endurance. Unless your whole body's cramping, you're generally not having electrolyte imbalance issues. All right. If you can stop, stretch that muscle, and suddenly that cramp goes away, let me tell you something. That is not an electrolyte-based cramp, guys. That, very simply, is a lack of muscular endurance, and you need to train it better. Your body must be able to handle high pedal tension for long periods of time. Think a time trial. These guys are not out there just spinning away la-di-da at a light tension. These guys are hammering a huge gear, and they're pushing like crazy for a long time, for an hour at a time. All right, that is what these muscular endurance intervals are all about. Being able to handle high amounts of tension for a long period of time or absolutely huge tension for shorter periods of time. Bursts, sprints, points races are notorious for needing high amounts of muscular endurance because you're sprinting 5, 6, 7 times in a short period of time. All right, think of it this way, that muscular endurance is basically like a bank account. All right, your training makes deposits. Every time you do an interval, you deposit a dollar. You deposit a dollar. You deposit a dollar. If you go out and you start draining that bank account on a hard race, say a points race, which is, of course, for those of you who are not aware, a points race, basically you sprint every couple laps for points. Whoever has the most points at the end is the winner. Whoever has the second most points is the second step of the podium, third most, third step, etc., etc. Imagine a points race. You've gone out and you've done 10 training sessions and you've put in 10 muscular endurance intervals. So you have $10 in your bank account. Now you go out and you do a points race. Well, in that points race, you have 5 sprints. Each sprint is going to cost you $2. All right? $2 worth of muscular endurance. Folks, you only got $10 in the bank. So if you sprint 5 times for $2 a piece, you've got nothing left to finish the rest of the race. What that means is you won't make it to that last sprint. And if you do, you're not going to survive that last sprint. All right? If you're going to be doing an effort like that, say you need $15 worth of muscular endurance to handle that points race, you better have $20 in the bank. or 25. Because let me tell you, if you overdraw that account, just like in real life, you get whacked with a $35 charge if you overdraw your checking account. If you overdraw your muscular endurance, you're going to be a hurting puppy for more than just a couple hours post-effort, post-workout, post-race, post-fondo. And that sucks. You don't want to be there. All right? Do not overdraw. Overdrawing is the end of your race or your effort or your fondo or whatever. You'll be limping home after that. So it's important to make regular deposits in that bank of me. All right. There is a difference between single effort muscular endurance and overall muscular endurance. Those single efforts are continuous work. Overall efforts are about the amount of time you can spend under tension for any given ride. So, for example, if you're going out, you're training, you're doing three efforts of 15 minutes, muscular endurance, 70 RPM sweet spot, for example. That's one of my favorite muscular endurance workouts is sweet spot, 15, 3x15. Or if you're a beast, you do 3x20. Some of you do 2x20 Tuesdays. Try this, 70 RPM, 91% of functional threshold, 90 to 92% of lactate threshold heart rate. There's your muscular endurance for 2x20s. Enjoy. You're going out and you're doing, say, let's do 2x20 or 3x15. You're doing 40 or 45 minutes total muscular endurance in three blocks of 15 minutes or two blocks of 20 minutes. Those single efforts versus those overall efforts, that overall endurance. All right, sure, you put in, say, 2x20, you put in 40 minutes of muscular endurance. That will grow, all right? Interest rate will take effect. You'll be able to do 20 and a half minutes next time, 21 minutes the time after that. All right. High cadence, low tension rides, just like I was talking about, 70 RPM, 91% of threshold. These are awesome to be doing in sub-threshold climbing efforts. So if you have a long, light gradient, like a 1 or 2% gradient, get your muscular endurance on for those kind of gradients. Those are killer for that. All right. That being said, I'm going to take a quick break. We're going to come back. We're going to talk about the keys to a successful base period. All right, wrapping up here, the keys to a successful base. We're going to start with me because me is the most important thing. You need to always be working on me. Every single ride that you do, every single training session that you do, you need to incorporate some kind of me. You need to continue to make deposits in the muscular endurance bank. Build more than you need. Always want to save more money than you think you need, just in case there's a rainy day. The same thing applies here. You need more muscular endurance. You better have it in the bank. So keep building it. Keep working on it all throughout your base period. All right, and again, it should be the absolute foundation for all of your training. Remember that Friel's triangle that we turned 120 degrees counterclockwise on its side? Guess what's on the bottom, folks? Muscular endurance is on the bottom, and everything tapers off from there. So that should be the absolute foundation of your training. It is in all of my plans, all of my base building plans. You will find a significant amount of muscular endurance training in those plans. All right. How do you get there? As we said, longer efforts, higher tension efforts, light, easy grade climbs, things like that. Those of you who are running into flatness issues, try doing them into a headwind. It's a great way. These are wonderful to do on an indoor trainer or on the rollers because you can completely and totally control the effort that you're putting out without regard to road surface, wind conditions, terrain, etc., etc. What do I consider the second most important thing here? I'm going to honestly say your speed work. All right. I hate that term. Your efficiency work, your neuromuscular skills. Efficiency is the absolute key to putting power into the pedals and thusly into the ground, translating you into forward motion. All right. A faster, Leg speed range, a range of cadences in which you're effective at, makes you adaptable to any situation you will find yourself in on a bike. Whether you are climbing an 18% grade or you are hanging out in a Peloton doing 35 miles an hour, coming out of corners, blazing fast in a criterium, the ability to change your cadence on command in the same gear without shifting is hugely, hugely important. I've talked about the plus or minus 15 RPM concept. That is something that needs to be refreshed, that needs to be thought about. You need to be able to range between, say, 90 RPM. You need to be comfortable at cadences from 75 RPM up to 105 RPM in the same gear. If you're coming out of a corner in a crit, you need to be able to wind that gear up before you have to shift, stand, and lose that microsecond. You do lose by shifting and standing to accelerate. You need to be able to turn that over. You need to be able to drop that RPM, that cadence, 15 RPM as you climb, as you crest a roller, so that you can be in the correct gear to power down the other side. All right. Again, efficiency is the key. If you can be more efficient than the guy next to you, it doesn't matter. If they're putting out more power than you, you will still be able to do more with the power you have. Workouts that help these skills: spin-ups, single leg drills, super spin drills, standing drills, single leg spin-ups. All right, you'll find all of these in my plans. Okay, I rely heavily on all of these efficiency and neuromuscular drills in order to build you as a cyclist. Number three, force work. Number 3A, gym work, focusing on posterior chain movements. Extension type movements, movements that simulate the pedal stroke, deadlifting, squatting, leg presses. These things simulate a pedal stroke. They help to build the muscles necessary to push the pedals hard. Lunges, cleans, things like that. Those are your gym exercises that are going to help build that. 3B, translating to the bike. You got to take all of that muscular force production and you have to put it on the bike. So you're going to be doing climbs, low cadence, very low cadence, 60 RPM, high pedal tensions. Standing drills, low cadence, high pedal tensions, almost like walking the bike up the hill. All right, we're talking that slow. We're talking every pedal stroke feels like an individual single leg press. That's what it should be. And that's how you translate that gym work over to your bike, all right? And again, force work is one of those two basic skills that creates muscular endurance. So this is important, folks. Endurance work, the other corner of the pyramid, number 4. This is essentially going to be what you gain with all the rest of your on-bike work, all right? Is it absolutely necessary you go out and you have a ride with a specific goal of I'm building endurance? No. Endurance will be built with all of the above skills. 1, 2, 3A, and 3B will all build, well, 3A not as much, but 3B, yes, will build endurance pathways. 3A can be used to build endurance pathways if you do it in Metcon style, where you get your heart rate up and then move right on to the next exercise to keep it up. So yes, you can get some endurance adaptations in the gym, but that's an entirely different topic. See the podcast on strength training for that. Endurance work should be nothing more than the occasional easy ride. If you're going to do an endurance-only ride, it better pretty much be a recovery ride or a coffee shop ride or a social ride. But otherwise, you should always be including some kind of efficiency skills, neuromuscular skills, speed skills, some kind of muscular endurance skills, or even some kind of force skills. All right. Just because you go above zone 2 or zone 3 heart rate or power does not necessarily mean your ride is high intensity. Your ride is still low intensity if you find that intensity factor to be, 0.7 or lower. For those of you with power meters, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. If your average heart rate is a zone 2 heart rate, you did basically an endurance ride. All right. It's a lot harder to figure this out with heart rate, mainly because you don't have an intensity factor to count on. So this is where power meters come in very nicely. But endurance will be built on every single ride. Remember that. parting thoughts here. Ways to make your base training more useful. Minor amounts of high-intensity work during your base period will help to stimulate those high-intensity pathway gains that I've talked about so many times. All right, that AMP kinase pathway, that AMPK pathway. All right, that is a huge pathway in mitochondrial biogenesis. The same thing you're doing with that mTOR pathway through strength training. You're trying to increase the density of those little power plants in your cells, in your muscle cells. Small amounts of high-intensity training will stimulate that even further. All right, and those are a good thing. That's a great thing to be able to do. So keep that in mind as something you need to be doing. You do need some higher intensity work. Once a week is about right. Maybe twice if you're an advanced athlete. Aside from stimulating those higher intensity pathways, it keeps your mind fresh. It keeps you focused on something other than, geez, I just got to go slog through this list today. Nobody wants to do that, folks. That sucks. If you do want to do that, there may be something else, maybe a psychological connection to the bike you need. But keeps your mind fresh. Right? Variety, they say, is the spice of life, and variety is indeed the spice of training. All right, and finally, it keeps the body physiologically off balance, requiring it to adapt to different stimuli and different circumstances, and that is hugely important to keeping progress rolling. So many people who plateau have plateaued because their body figured out what they're doing. Your body is smart. If it finds out that you're doing the same thing and all it has to adapt to is that thing, it's going to do that and suddenly it's going to stop improving. If it doesn't have to change, it's not going to change. You have to stimulate it to change. All right. And one final note on efficiency work, folks. I've had a lot of questions about efficiency work since my advanced base training came out. Efficiency are things like position on the bike while pedaling, saddle position while pedaling, sliding to the front or back of the saddle. Handlebar position, where your hands are on the bars. Are they on the drops? Are they on the tops? Are they on the hoods? Are they in the Belgian hoods? Are they in deep drops? Are they in the shallow drops? Where's your body position? Is it upright? Is it crouched down low? Is it hunched over the bars? Is it in a time trial position? Efficiency work also relates highly to stretching, mobility, and stability work. That is a completely different topic, one which requires almost its own podcast in itself, and one that I spend a lot of time working on with clients and patients as well. So keep that in mind as well, that stretching, stability, and mobility is all part of your base training. All right. And one last thing for you guys to remember. This is going to be my parting shot to all of you, especially you competitive cyclists, and especially you guys who sit there and go, well, you know, coach, I rode 10,000 miles last year. And I rode 10,000 miles the year before that. And I rode 10,000 miles the years before that. And I rode 10,000 miles for the past 10 years. Why haven't I gotten any faster? Let me tell you something. Let me let you in on a secret. And here's basically this secret. I'm going to give away the secret of all of my training. Miles don't matter. The base miles you need to be a competitive cyclist, the base miles for competitive cycling, whether it's fondos, whether it's group rides, whether it's races of any kind, do not need to be high. They just need to be efficient. If you can do in 10 miles what the guy next to you does in 100 miles, which one of you is going to be more recovered, fresher, and more efficient when it comes time to throw down? The answer is obvious, folks. The answer is 100% obvious. So I hope you take the information I gave you today. I hope you look at the training you're doing in your base period, and I hope you alter it to become a more efficient cyclist and get more done in less time. Once again, I'm Coach Rob. Check me out, tailwind-coaching.com, for all the show notes from this episode and for past episodes of the Tailwind Coaching Podcast, including the show notes for this episode, which will have strength training for cycles 1 and 2, possibly a few other links that will be of value to you. I want all of you to ride hard, ride strong, ride fast, ride efficient, keep the shiny side up, keep the rubber side down, and I'll be talking to all of you again real soon.